Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Okay, massive welcome to the Red Agenda Extra. I'm Steve Hothersall, Kiefer O'Neill, James Pearce, both here to look ahead to the game at Watford, the return of the Premier League. And we'll also put the focus on Liverpool's cult hero, Joel Matip, and the Reds' head of nutrition, Mona Nemmer. James has done an exclusive interview with Mona, so we'll talk about that later on. Obviously, straight out of the international break and into a pretty busy period, seven games in 22 days, Watford, Atletico and Manchester United, the first three fixtures. Kiefer, there's no rest from here on in.
No rest for the wicked, Steve, is there? Feel that way myself. We was meant to record this podcast a bit earlier, but I've been shooting off all over the place today. Yeah, it's going to be another insane time for Liverpool, as was the last. Was it like seven games in 22 days recently as well? So whatever that was. So yeah, I think, you know, the fixtures are coming thick and fast. Just an international break every like day now, isn't there? Which is annoying, which doesn't help the players, particularly those of Brazilian descent. So yeah, that's going to be tricky as well for Liverpool to manage, because the players filling in for those players are players potentially that have also been involved on international. And Liverpool, I don't know what the actual record, but I think Liverpool do win games, quite a lot of them, but usually after the international break you find they drop off a little bit because everyone's been all over the world. You know, they usually get wins after that, but you know, Watford game's an interesting one, isn't it, considering, you know, Liverpool were invincible on the way to the league title until they made that trip to Watford, which was, I think, the last Premier League away game fans got to go to. So fans will be back there, and yeah, just obviously Atletico's going to be a low block of hell, I can well imagine, for Liverpool to try and break down. And then United is just massive, isn't it, emotionally as anything else.
Let's get into these South American players and the situation that currently stands. So there was a dilemma, James, in the last transfer window. Thankfully it all got sorted and everything was fine, but this looks like it could be different. So Alisson and Fabinho are going to be involved in a Brazil fixture, which is taking place in the early hours of Friday morning UK time, but then they're straight on a plane. But is it absolutely inconceivable to think that they could feature for Liverpool, what, 35 hours later?
Yeah, I think highly unlikely. I think Fabinho has gone on record in the last 24 hours as saying that, you know, he doesn't expect to start against Watford, and the same goes for Alisson. I think obviously Liverpool will do everything they can to get them back as soon as possible, and in situations like this, usually, you know, the elite clubs actually chip in together and put on, you know, private planes to get their players back. But of course, you know, for the other Premier League clubs affected by this, they've got a lot more time. You know, Liverpool being the lunchtime kickoff, it's the shortest of short straws, really, after the international break. And I just think it's an absolutely ludicrous situation, you know, which definitely damages the integrity of the Premier League, because, you know, we've seen in Spain that you know, that they've actually cancelled some games this weekend where players weren't going to have players back from South American international fixtures in time. Yet the show goes on in the Premier League, and it's not right, is it, that Liverpool should have to go into a game? You know, you could say it's only Watford. You know, they should be able to beat Watford without a couple of key personnel. But it just shouldn't be a situation that's arisen. And we know why, obviously, with, you know, with the pandemic, them having to fit in three games rather than two. I think Brazil have already played Venezuela and Colombia, and they're playing Uruguay, as you say, you know, 1:30 a.m. UK time on Friday. So you're talking 35 hours between that game kicking off in Brazil and the game at Vicarage Road. So I think obviously what will happen is they'll be assessed when they do get back, and then a final decision will be made. But I think that is a very big ask, and obviously if Alisson doesn't play, then it's going to be a really big day for Quiveen Kelleher.
You would imagine, Kiva, that maybe Alisson is the more likely of the two to feature given the position, but maybe realistically he won't. But then what's your understanding of how that rolls onto the Atletico game as well, Kiva?
I mean, this is just to come onto the topic of games in quick succession like this. I mean, Liverpool were obviously forced to play in the League Cup against Aston Villa that time and then play a final, what was it, James, like 24 hours later, if not less. So, I mean, we've been here before, and Jürgen Klopp always gets a bit of stick. He's maybe perceived as moaning about this, but I think across the board, all managers will talk about this. And, we know the players are human. I think Thibaut Courtois spoke on it really well, and probably like we've never actually heard a player come out and say, we are just people at the end of the day, and, we're getting pulled in different directions. And, that does take a mental and physical toll on these players as well. And I don't know, in terms of the quarantine, to come back to your question, Steve, I'm not sure. I think, will he have to quarantine? Like, I think it feels the same as last time, where it wasn't until like the day before the games where we were really clear on what was going to happen. So I'm not sure if this means they have to, 10-day, 14-day? I'm not entirely sure on what the number of days might be, whether they'll be, because they're football players and they're vaccinated potentially, but are they allowed to not quarantine? It's just, you feel a bit lost in it again. And this is a bit silly because we had the same thing happen last month, and you thought that maybe, there might in that time be discussions and things that happen and solutions, but nothing seems to have really worked out after what was perceived to be positive talks between, clubs and countries.
I'd be amazed, James, if this wasn't infuriating Jurgen Klopp. Undoubtedly, he'll have something to say, won't he, in his pre-match press conference?
Yeah, 100%, because, I think it will just absolutely enrage him. I think he's spoken previously on it, and obviously we know that Liverpool did put in a request to try and get the kickoff time of Saturday's game changed, because, if it was a 3 o'clock or even better, a 5:30 or an evening kickoff, clearly then that gives you some precious hours to try and get those players in a position where they're able to play. So, not surprisingly, Watford obviously said no to that change. Their argument was one of our fans have been prepared, have made arrangements based around the lunchtime kickoff. But why would Watford agree to it? They're not stupid, are they? They want to face a weakened Liverpool team. The responsibility lies with the Premier League, and it comes back to just how ridiculous the global football calendar is, and how players get pulled in so many different directions. So I feel sorry for, Alisson and Fabinho, that, they had that situation last month where obviously, they couldn't travel just because, it's just, in terms of just picking up what Kiva said, the difference between this month and last month is that last month, if the clubs had let those players go to South America, they would have had to have done 10 days quarantine in a hotel next to the airport where they just had their meals delivered to them. And, essentially, as Klopp said himself, you're talking about 10 days of, of A, you're not eating right, B, you're not doing any exercise. The impact that has, he said, you're probably looking at another 2 weeks after that to get players back up to speed. And then, of course, they'll be going off on international duty again. I think the big difference and one of the key concessions that the clubs had, which led to them releasing players this time around, is, yes, it's 10 days quarantine, but it's not quarantine on the same basis. It's 10 days where they just have to be in accommodation away from their usual accommodation. So they're basically away from their families for another 10 days from when they come back. But, they don't have those other restrictions, and they're allowed out to train and play, obviously, as long as the tests are negative. So,
So they'd be allowed to go to Madrid?
Yes. Yeah. That's my understanding, that Certainly the last time I spoke to someone at Liverpool, which was the back end of last week, they'd been told that there would be no issues for them. So they're not quarantining in the same way as that was just going to be impossible to sanction a month ago. They would be allowed to travel to Madrid and be part of that game against Atletico on Tuesday night, even if they're not deemed in a physical condition, well enough to kind of play against Watford.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
These Premier League games are hard enough, Kiva, but obviously you're coming up against a Watford side with a brand new manager in place, a very likeable manager, I think, for everyone across the board. You look at him and think, well, yeah, he did great things with Leicester. Liverpool missing a couple of key players, only unbeaten side in the Premier League, not lost a game in any competition since April. But how much of a banana skin could this possibly be?
I mean, Watford literally wear yellow, don't they? So they couldn't get any more banana skin for you. Yeah, I think especially with what happened the last time Liverpool went to Vicarage Road, won't be fresh in the memory, but, you know, I think that was a disappointing sort of way to end the run that they were on that season. And, you know, it would be massively disappointing to lose that unbeaten streak that they've got going now, because I think that's everything to Liverpool. As long as they can keep that going, they'll be in the hunt for the title, you'd imagine. One or two slip-ups might come along the way, that's a given, but, you know, to come, I think, on Saturday, there would be, you know, Liverpool would have excuses potentially if Kelleher is in goal, or, you know, you don't know, you were without your holding midfielder. But I guess, you know, again, you know, Watford fans will be arguing that I guess Liverpool's strength and depth is pretty all right, isn't it? You know, a lot better than a lot of clubs. But I think, yeah, with Ranieri having just taken over, there's probably a good feeling now at Watford. It's always that first game's always tricky. And, you know, he hasn't just come in overnight. It's not like this is a couple of weeks now, isn't it? So it's, you know, he's had time to sort of get their bed in his ideas. And just, yeah, the fans will be reacting to him positively. And it's about how Liverpool handle that, because, you know, at Brentford, you know, I was at that game and they didn't seem to handle that very well. You know, the crowd were behind Brentford and, you know, Liverpool lost their heads a little bit, which is something that we haven't really seen from them. Obviously, they improved in games thereafter, particularly against Man City in that second half. I think that was massively important to put in that performance. But it's been, you know, a long international break, this one, hasn't it? They all feel long anyway, even if it's a week. But, you know, with it being 2 weeks and everything else that's going on, I think it's going to be tricky for Liverpool. But, you know, you definitely should be winning those games, even if, you know, all this stuff does feel like it's going against Liverpool. They are the stronger team and should be coming away with the 3 points.
Well, they should, shouldn't they? Claudio might be trying to draw James on what happened at Brentford. He might be trying to instill that in his players. But they're very different clubs. Brentford have had stability with their manager. In terms of Watford, what, he's the 16th manager in 10 years? Liverpool have had three, but 16 managers in 10 years.
Yeah, it's just a crazy setup, isn't it? And they've, you know, they've obviously gone up and down the leagues a few times during that period. And yeah, I don't think any manager goes to Watford with a philosophy and looking to put long-term plans in place. You know, it's sink or swim straight away. And yeah, I think probably the payoff probably helps ease the pain of knowing that a few bad results and you'll be getting that dreaded knock on the door. So, yeah, it's, you know, I think it definitely does make it more difficult, the fact that, you know, Ranieri's gone in there. I think you only had to look at his press comments yesterday to see that, you know, he just injects that positivity, doesn't he? And probably a little bit of hope where, you know, although it's relatively early on in the season, the fact that, you know, Watford had some, you know, some setbacks, and, you know, there was probably, you know, almost a little bit of an air of resignation in terms of, you know, it's going to be a real struggle to stay up again. And then I think Ranieri comes in and it just offers that kind of fresh hope, doesn't it, for the fans. So I'm sure it will be, you know, not the easiest of environments. And we've seen Liverpool obviously come unstuck at Vicarage Road in the past. We know that, you know, if, you know, I think I'm sure what happened at Brentford will feature in Klopp's team talk in terms of what the impact can be if you don't start a game properly, if you don't impose yourself on the game, if you give the home fans something to shout about early on, you cause trouble for yourselves. And hopefully, because of what happened at Brentford, I think, you know, that is probably the perfect warning in terms of what Klopp says to the players beforehand. And obviously, despite, you know, the likely absence of some key personnel, you know, massive that Trent Alexander-Arnold looks like he's fit and ready to return, having returned to full training this week, because I think, you know, as well as James Milner did in the Champions League game at Porto, there's no doubt, you know, he did really struggle against Man City, and you know, he's a fantastic player to have around the place. But we all know that Liverpool, with and without Alexander-Arnold, are two very different forces, and just having that creative spark and dynamism back will certainly give them another dimension.
It just shows, James, how finely tuned a cog, a machine Liverpool are. That even when you take just one out, and he's hyper important, isn't he, Trent? But you take him out and Milner was fine, but actually you do lose quite a lot of what Liverpool are about as the total force.
Yeah, 100%. I think you only had to listen to Klopp. Kind of, he joined the debate, didn't he, recently? I think it was probably on the back of after having Trent played a rare game in midfield, didn't he, for England back in September, and talked about then, you know, why on earth would you possibly move Alexander-Arnold from right back when, you know, he's almost ripped up the blueprint in terms of how influential a right back can be in games. So we know so much of Liverpool's, you know, potency goes through him. With the, you know, I think there was a stat before he suffered that groin injury the day before they flew to Porto, saying that no player created more chances in the Premier League so far this season. And, you know, that just underlines to you his importance. I think his role's changed slightly this season. We're seeing him come inside a lot more and ask different questions of opposing teams as well. But yeah, with his passing range, his quality from wide areas, you know, yeah, really important. And also, you know, throw into the mix the fact that Diogo Jota, you know, was released early by Portugal because he had a slight problem, but, you know, he's trained normally as well, and Klopp said he expects him to start. So yeah, those two being fit and ready, you know, should help ease some concerns. Although, you know, it'd be interesting to see who, if Fabinho doesn't feature, then who does play in that kind of holding midfield role, because obviously there's probably no kind of obvious candidate. Obviously, we've seen Curtis Jones, you know, well, he certainly played the first half there, didn't he, against Norwich in the League Cup. Obviously, Milner has played that previously, but you know, Klopp, Liverpool don't really have, you know, Henderson has obviously played football there as well, but it's, you know, Fabinho is an absolute specialist, isn't he? And there's no one in that Liverpool squad who can perform that number six role at the same level as Fabinho.
Right, to make sure nothing goes wrong at Watford, that the defence has to be on its game. It can't be showing itself the same way it did at Brentford, Kiva. And you've written actually on both the centre-halves recently. I just want to start on some of the stats that you've looked at surrounding Virgil van Dijk and how his season has differed from perhaps previous seasons for Liverpool. How's that best displayed stats-wise?
I mean, it's difficult because I wanted to look at Virgil van Dijk's start of the season. It just interested me, and I thought, you know, fans would be interested by it because you have seen a drop-off from him. Now that's expected because he's just come back from a major injury, major surgery as well. You know, obviously approaching a year now since that. But obviously, you know, it takes 18 months for an ACL to be fully, for a player to be any athlete or even person, if they get the right treatment, to be fully recovered. So he's still in that recovery process, as much as he's playing week in, week out for Liverpool. There's still, you know, levels he can get to. Obviously, he was never going to come back at the top end of his game where he sort of left off from. That was, you know, obvious for everyone. Yet still, he's performing at such a high level and showing that, you know, he can get back to those levels. He isn't quite there at the minute. You know,
it's a year on now, isn't it? Is that right? Exactly.
Yeah,
a year since the Derby?
October the 17th, I think it was, last year. So, you know, I mean, you expect those drop-offs early. He's probably, you know, still dominant in all these areas because he's not a player who actually... The best thing about Van Dijk is he just sort of watches and waits and lets opposition players sort of make their move or shepherds them. You know, he's very controlled. Probably that's why he has been the best defender in the world for quite some time. You know, he still needs to get up to that level again and claim back his title, I think, which, you know, he's definitely showing that he's sort of on that trajectory and on that path to doing so. But I think he is being more careful, more mindful. You know, I haven't watched like clips of him through the start of the season. You can see that obviously Joel Matip stepped up and that's been massive. But even in like the game against Norwich, there was moments when he just sort of let Kostas Tsimikas deal with something because he was like, I can't be everywhere all at once. I feel like he realises that now, and you know, he needs to manage himself a little bit more because obviously when you've done an ACL in your right knee, you not only like, I think it's like 50% maybe, something like that, that it's 50% weaker or something. But you're more likely to damage that again, but also your other knee is likely to get damaged too because you're putting maybe, you know, mentally thinking about it in a different way. I don't feel like Van Dijk is, because you can just tell that he's got that sort of elite mentality that he's just, you know, he's back now and he's working towards being the best defender in the world. I think we're seeing instances of that from him. But there's a little bit of a way to go for him to get back there. You feel like towards the end of the season, we'll definitely know where he is in terms of how he's got back from his injury. Because obviously 7 Premier League games is such a short and little bit of data to go off. But, you know, from what we're seeing, he's still quite elite and quite above, you know, most other defenders in the league. And he's probably playing at not really his full capacity yet. Whether he can get back there, you know, we don't actually know that, but you feel like a player that's already showing those positive signs definitely can. He's sort of cruising at the minute, which is, I think, positive from him. He's engaging less than he would, like, in terms of tackling and stuff. He's not going in for as many as he probably would have, but then he didn't really do that anyway, and that's, I think, what makes him great. So, yeah, I think he's, you know, shown really a positive start to the season. And I think just his influence, you can just tell it sort of radiates across the defence. I think Alisson's had a much improved start to the season than he probably did have last season. And that's because, you know, Van Dijk's there. I'm thinking towards, you know, the back end of the season when Van Dijk wasn't there, everyone struggled a little bit. Just having him there helps. I think it would help any of us in five-a-side or, you know, playing for Liverpool.
Yeah, there's still extra levels which you can go to. We all know that, as you've said. James, do you feel he's playing less of those sort of raking passes which impose Liverpool on opposition teams? You know, pinging it to the right-hand side and enabling Trent and Mo to press as much as they have?
Yeah, I think certainly there's been a different Virgil van Dijk so far this season. But I think it was just to be expected. I just don't think it was ever realistic that he could come back and just, you know, you can't just flick a switch and be exactly who you were. I think I thought that the piece that Kiva wrote the stats kind of backed up what it felt like Uriah had told you so far this season, was that it was, yeah, it's fantastic that he's back, and that, you know, Virgil van Dijk at 70-80% is still far superior to most of his peers. But, you know, that he's not quite, you know, of course, the same force, and it's going to take time. I think, you know, you speak to physios who have worked with players who have been through ruptured ACLs, and they, you know, the time that you were out, you almost have to like double that to get to before you work out when you'll be back to where you were. So, you know, if you're out for 9 months, you're talking about potentially 18 months altogether between from when you did it to when you're back to your absolute peak. So so yeah I think you know, clearly he's so important, he's so influential. You know, I think he's also had a knock-on effect in terms of how well Joel Matip has started the season, just which I'm sure we'll come on to Matip. But I think, you know, Matip is a quiet guy. He's not a natural leader in the way that Van Dijk is, and I think his game is massively enhanced by having someone like Van Dijk alongside him. And obviously those are the kind of qualities that you don't see in stats and you don't see in numbers and passing figures and tackles and interceptions and whatever. I just think they work really well as a partnership because, you know, Van Dijk is that vocal force and Matip kind of feeds off that.
Let's talk about Joel Matip. So, Kiva, you got a fine exclusive with the person behind the No Context Joel Matip social media feed, which has taken the world by storm. Even the Liverpool team. So Virgil loves a bit of this.
Yeah, it's the best thing on Twitter, I think, for me. I can't quite explain why Joel Matip is memeable, so I thought, why not ask the person who runs the account that has, you know, kind of made him the most memeable footballer almost.
Why did he do it? Why did he set it up?
The person was basically on a lunch board. It works in marketing and just thought, let's go for it. You know, I think Joel Matip's an interesting player. I think it was the time when, you know, those accounts were springing up. You'd obviously got like the No Context Eddie Hearn and that kind of thing that were doing really well. So I think they just sort of was like, yeah, let's go for that. Go for Matip, and didn't quite expect for it to take off in the way that it did. And just, I mean, anything he does now, the account gets sort of, you know, bombarded almost with like pictures and screenshots and like little video clips and stuff. And, you know, I think it's sort of like Matip's not on social media, so this is the way we all get our little bit of Joel Matip content. And there's just some cracking bits. I think it sums him up, the last post that they done after the Man City game where, you know, Salah's just scored that incredible goal. The whole team are huddled together and then Matip's just stood about 5 yards away from them with his hands on his head. Just like, you know, I think that really sums him up. You know, I think those Franz Beckenbauer runs into midfield and beyond are just always enjoyable, but like he's actually really good at it and probably doesn't get enough credit for how much of a good defender he is. And I think, like James mentioned there, he's sort of starting to step out of Van Dijk's shadow almost. He's stepping up this season in a way we haven't seen from him previously, because we know those niggly injuries have sort of, you know, disrupted his Liverpool career. But, you know, he's a player that has taken Liverpool to Champions League finals with his performances. So, you know, we know that there's a quality player in there. Jurgen Klopp, I think, said recently, didn't he? He can't help anyone who doesn't see the quality of Joel Matip. It's clear for people to see, but I feel like away from, you know, Liverpool's fan base, people are more reluctant to sort of take him on because maybe he isn't that sort of, you know, Instagram footballer as well. He hasn't got that like social media side of him. He hasn't got that like, you know, there's not on, he just like the person running the account said, you know, he's the type of person to, you know, play a game for Liverpool and then go home and just chill out with his wife and his family. And he's just very, you know, almost like he's not a footballer. He doesn't, I feel like they were sort of saying as well, like he looks like he shouldn't be a footballer, or like he shouldn't be a good defender, but he is. And I think that sort of feeds into it as well. And, you know, a lot of these players are living Liverpool legends, but not all of them are cult icons. And I definitely think Joel Matip's that.
Yeah, he's one of those. I mean, how many other fans, James, do you reckon, of other teams are saying Joel Matip's up there with the very best centre-halves in the Premier League?
Very few. I think, he definitely fits into that category of players who aren't widely appreciated beyond Liverpool. I think I think just the way he goes about his business isn't, he's not flash in any way, is he? And I think it suits him to go under the radar. He doesn't crave attention. Anyone who's ever seen him, you know, when he's interviewed by the media, he's a man of of very few words. But I think, you know, he's exactly the type of personality that Klopp absolutely loves, isn't he? Like, just someone who's more than happy to just let his performances do the talking for him. He's much more about substance than style. And I think the biggest compliment you can pay him is no Liverpool fan really is talking about Ibrahima Konate and why is he not playing. And because, you know, I think probably rewind 3 or 4 months, the expectation was that Konate would quickly establish himself as Van Dijk's kind of number one partner. But, that's certainly not been the case. Matip earned the right on the back of the pre-season he had. Looked incredibly sharp and hungry and fit. He's just gone from strength to strength on the back of that. So, he's going to take some shifting. I think, obviously, as the fixture list does crank up, it'll be interesting even this coming week whether Klopp does feel that he's got three games in him. Three difficult games, you know, Watford, Atletico and United, or whether he does feel the need to rotate. But I certainly think at the moment, you know, it's not even much of a decision for the manager in terms of what is his number one centre-back partnership.
Absolutely. I was amazed, Kiva, in your piece when you put that he's missed nearly 100 games. I mean, that's remarkable, isn't it? You can only hope that he stays injury-free now.
Yeah, and the thing is with Matip, which is quite interesting, I think when he got injured at the end of January, wasn't it, last season, I think he missed then, was it like maybe 20-odd games or something? Whatever it was the most games he'd ever missed in one single sort of hit. Other than that, it's usually just like little, you know, odds and sods, sort of a game here, a game there, just for little muscle things, thigh problems, you know, that kind of thing, where he's never actually had a major injury until, like, obviously this injury. And, you know, I think having, like James said, that time to sort of have his operation, fully recover, and then, you know, have the pre-season that has now kicked him on into this. But, you know, he's definitely someone who still needs to be managed in terms of his minutes, because you do worry that there could be a flare-up or something like that. But you worry about that at the same time. Then, like James has mentioned there, you've got Konate and Joe Gomez chomping at the bit to get back in. So, I mean, the fact he's holding them off is pretty incredible. And at times in the past, he's, you know, come away with Man of the Match awards when he's been playing alongside Van Dijk, who probably was at his peak at those times. But, you know, Matip's the one that's shone. So, you know, I think he has been underrated by a lot of people for a long time. And it's nice for him to finally maybe be getting a little bit more of a wider spotlight thrust upon him.
Right, let's finish the Red Agenda Extra with a piece on nutrition. So Liverpool's head of nutrition is Mona Nemmer. And Jürgen's been very public in saying that Mona has changed things dramatically at the football club in terms of the fitness and the influence on the player. So you've had an exclusive sit down with Mona, who's got a brand new book out. How much of an influence is Mona? What did you get on that front, James?
Yeah, it was a fascinating half hour, really. She's got a new book out entitled A Taste of the Liverpool Way, which is, you know, it's initially I thought it might be some kind of cookbook recipe, list of recipes, and there are a little bit of that in there, but it's more about imparting the knowledge that she's brought to Liverpool over the last 5 years, wanting to kind of educate and provide that for fans, really, to almost, you know, look at their own health and well-being in the same way as the players do. And there's some fascinating insight in there. I mean, the big thing for me talking to her is just the attention to detail, where, you know, you're talking about individual diet plans based around, you know, a player's age, ethnicity, height, weight, you know, metabolism, body fat, allergies, you know, even their position on the pitch, the amount of minutes in terms of detailing what carbs and proteins and fats they need, and just the analysis that goes into whether it's, you know, saliva or blood or urine, and, you know, the data that's collected from each training session, how that is used to then make adjustments to nutritional programs that the players are on. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's, the more like speaking to her and just how engaging she is, and you kind of realize that, you know, just Klopp is being very genuine when he refers to her as being one of his most important signings, because she's certainly transformed that area of the club.
I would imagine that trust is one of the biggest thing here, because if you had a nutritionist, and I'm sure lots of players would leave their football club and then head home and just jam down a pack of custard creams and, you know, not say anything to the nutritionist. But I would imagine it's what we all do, isn't it? She's got to have an influence over big players, hasn't she? Who've got to believe in what she's saying and actually follow it.
Yeah. And I think that was interesting, because I did ask her if there was a list of things that were banned. Because, you know, every so often you do hear of ridiculous stories in football, don't you, where a manager's come in and has banned ketchup or bread rolls from the player's canteen or something. And she said, no, there's nothing that's banned. She said, you know, there's no, like, you know, red cards or yellow cards dished out to anyone that has a bar of chocolate or, you know, has a burger or something. She just said it's all about trust and education and knowledge. And she said, so she'll, you know, they'll say to players, well, you know, if you want to have that, then that's fine. But these are the implications of eating that. And, you know, she talks in the book about, you know, it's the nutritional value of potatoes if you keep the skin on compared to, you know, if you fry them, you know, the nutritional value, if you want some chocolate, having dark chocolate compared to lighter chocolate that's obviously got a heavier, you know, sugar and milk content. And really interesting how, she talks about how, you know, she's always felt that is the best way to go, to almost carry people with you and educate and give them that, equip them with that knowledge, rather than, you know, rule with an iron fist and demand that they do certain things. And even looking at the, you know, the images of the canteen in the AXA training centre at Kirby, and it's very much like the hub of the whole complex, you know, where players and staff eat together both before training and after training. You know, it's almost looks like a marketplace, really, with all the different stations and the juice stations and the pasta stations and the rice and the fruit and the vegetables and everything. And it's exactly what Klopp wanted, because I think when he came in, there was a feeling that players looked upon it as, you know, you'd grab something, you'd shovel it down, and then you'd be on your way. And now it's somewhere where players really do spend a lot more time. And I think because she's made it enjoyable, they've embraced learning about it. And there's a lot of input from, you know, pretty much every player in the first team squad talking about how she's helped them and how their own habits have changed. And it's fascinating. You know, she also talked about, you know, the demands of, you know, obviously this week with, you know, having to try and get players to take on board, you know, lean meat and pasta at 9 o'clock in the morning for a 12:30 kickoff, because that's another thing that, you know, and obviously with away games they take their own chef and their own ingredients with them. So it's a massive logistical exercise. Even more so, I think, with a week like this, where you've got three away games, including a trip to Spain. But it seems to function in incredibly well. And I think the fact that she's put all these changes in place while carrying the players with her kind of just shows that they massively appreciate her input. And she is a kind of a vital cog in a kind of a well-oiled machine.
It's a far cry from the boot room. Jan Molby tells a great story of how when he arrived, they basically get on the bus and they get shouted at by Ronnie Moran for eating bread. And it was essentially a no, you can't eat bread. He said, but then Ronnie would dish out toast in the masses to them. Like they didn't seem to understand the difference. They seemed to think that toast was fine, but bread wasn't. But I think nutrition's come a long way. Your piece is going to be up back end of this week, so people check that out on Mona Nema. Thank you very much, James. Thank you, Kiva, as always. Brilliant piece on Virgil and Joel Matip. Check that out on The Athletic as well. And thanks for listening to The Red Agenda.